Here we all are, bright and early. Some of you might have had a very long week. Others of you may be just starting the busyness that might be coming over the weekend. But it's always very nice to meet in this way. Just before we get started, we can just settle our motivation and our posture, adjusting body and mind. So becoming present to each other. As we are spread out around the world, literally joined by pixels of light, creating the mandala, upholding the mandala of our gurus, attempting to uphold the mandala of harmony in the world. And at the very least, if we can't be any benefit, then to not make things anything any worse. And then there's all the things that are going on behind the scenes for all of us in our life that create many ups and downs. They're all the ripening karmas. The overreaching ripening karma that we have, of course, is a really positive one because here we are in our fortunate, precious human rebirth, the odds of which are astronomically impossible, and yet here we are. So no matter what's going on, it really is a cause for rejoicing that we are all here. And so then we can seize this opportunity, really appreciate that we have this opportunity, even though sometimes we get so bogged down in the details we forget. But to really adjust our motivation so that everything that we do in our life becomes part of the path to enlightenment. And especially tonight, everything that we talk about and all the meditations and all the problems and all the good things all become part of that journey towards enlightenment for the benefit of everybody. So the prayer to generate bodhicitta from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, which is in the gold prayer book on page 229. It's our favorite page. With the wish to free all beings, I shall always go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until I reach full enlightenment. Inspired by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, I generate the mind of full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. So we've set our motivation and Ava, you've turned into a furry.
So I was trying to put a background on, and
It's really disconcerting.
jeez. Just a few, this happened a few times, and I just wonder if this is true. I've been doing my Vaishnava practice every evening for a long time. It just seems that whenever I've noticed a couple of times, whenever, even if I don't know, like I'm about to meet a Rinpoche or I get sick. And like recently, for example, I just had this terrible flu. And my husband didn't get it, no one else got it. It was just eventually it just petered off early this week when I met
No, I
them
think
personally.
it can definitely be a thing, Ava, definitely.
Like a
And
purification thing.
yeah, well, and since we're doing nondros, anything to do with coughing, right? That's upwards purification. It's like literally up and out.
Oh, I'll tell you what, I was coughing that much.
The
Doozy.
tricky thing though is to use the experience, because this so often what happens is we go, oh, and we do it in hindsight.
Yeah.
But really, the challenge during especially Vajrasattva, it can help focus us, is that when we do get sick and we are coughing, coughing things up, or everything's coming out, our head, that you go, oh, this is just like the upward purification. How fantastic! And you have that, you
Yeah.
marry the two together,
Yeah.
so that
Yeah.
it stops being an ordinary sickness, because that's the great curse that we have on ourselves from self-grasping, is that we just automatically see everything as ordinary, and actually none of it is. And especially during Nongdrong, so every time that these intense experiences happen, you can see through to the deeper meaning of it and turn them into Dharma
Yeah, it was
instead
super
of.
interesting.
In terms of any kind of problems, you always start by dealing with the most obvious, simple thing, which is make sure your immune system is good, have all your vaccines, wear a mask, get enough sleep, drink enough water, all of those things. That's the ordinary thing. And we We have to do that because we are in a conventional reality. So we can't ignore the conventional reality. Then, on top of that, we've got to bring in and turn it from a worldly concern into Dharma. And so, for that, then you see a deeper meaning in it. You incorporate it into the practice. And of course, especially with sickness, you can incorporate Tonglen so that you can think, may I take all the suffering and the sickness off everybody else? And especially if you're going to teachings with a lama, you think, may I take all of his health obstacles off him? May they ripen on me so that the Geshe doesn't have to get sick or the Rinpoche doesn't have to get sick. May it be me instead.
Good. Thank you. Thank you.
But it is a thing that happens because I remember when I first got to Lungri Tumpa Centre and we were still in Newmarket, and I was new to leading pujas and things like that, totally terrified, had no idea what I was doing, had all of these kind of tutorials with Geshe Tashi Sering, how on earth, what do I do and what does it mean? And also with his attendant, Venerable Sering. And then I'd study all day before the puja, and then I'd get to the puja and I'd immediately get the flu. Straight away, I'd be singing, my nose would be blocked, I'd be coughing, the whole thing. I'd have fevers and chills and whatever. And then do the puja. The puja would be like really hard work. And then a couple of hours after the puja, the flu was gone again. And it happened for a couple of years. There's also, I remember the last time His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, came to Australia, and a lot of people got sick beforehand and couldn't go. And so that's kind of like the more important something, often the bigger the obstacles. Same with Jado Rinpoche, people, and also with Lama Zopa Rinpoche, lots of people would get sick and couldn't actually even go. So, or they didn't get sick, but their car broke down on the way. Or things like that. So every now and again, obstacles will come up, and then it's whether you succumb to those obstacles. Instead of, I mean, the thing when it's before an event, you've got to switch the mindset. Instead of going, oh no, you switch the mindset to no matter what.
So I was lucky to be at the airport when Jado Rinpoche got there because I'm only down the road from Mauritius Airport. So I was like, oh, I can go there and be there as well and join the party. And everyone was there, and it was, this is great. But the night, a couple of nights before, I was doing actually Vaishya practice, and I got really violently sick really quickly, and it was all over in a couple of hours, and then I was fine.
That's all very good signs. And of course, going to meet the guru at the airport, and also to see the guru off at the airport or wherever is to meet the guru or see them off is one of the causes for always being able to meet the guru in future lives. So it's really important to do that. Whether you
Yeah,
actually show up to the airport or whether you're just all in this at the center ready to welcome them, it's a really good thing to do. So good on you. It's such a small, easy thing to do to just be there to greet the Lama.
I'm sort of finding now if I'm driving and I get really cranky with the person in front of me because they've done something silly, which irritates me when I drive. I'm actually finding the minute I've sort of lost my temper, I'm now actually automatically doing one long Vajrasattva mantra. I've never done it, So, but I'm sort of trying to purify as I go, just to sort of do that. But it's almost happening automatically now, because I never used to. I'd sort of think later, I'll probably burn in karmic hells for all that anger, but.
No, purify as you go. That is fantastic, Fran. Absolutely exactly what should be done. Yep. Because anyway, the urge to purify, it comes because you've recognized you've done something unskillful. And so the moment you regret and then have the urge to purify, you are actually already purifying. I think it's using the momentum of the negativity to then counter the negativity. So doing it on the spot like that is much better than it all accumulating and then doing it later.
Yeah, I had a dream that I died and that I was in the Bardo and I was really scared and lots of different things were happening. And I started saying Vajrasattva mantras, like lots of them. And then when I woke up in the morning, I was very pleased that
Very pleased that you woke up in the same body.
that I woke up in the same body, and also that that was my instinct. And I just hope that if I was ever in that spot, that I might remember that a little bit of it and have the same instinct, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure. To be able to remember Vajrasattva in your dreams, that's fantastic. It's a very good sign. So whatever you're doing, keep on doing. You can take a lot of confidence from that. Yeah, very good. So sometimes you can have nightmares and things, and it can actually be the end of an obstacle. It's not like a bad sign. It's because something's coming up, and it's coming up in your dreams in a more slightly more subtle consciousness than manifesting out into the physical world. Especially, I think with Vajrasattva, you can have a lot of dreams, and you can have a lot of quite terrifying dreams. And so you kind of go through processes in dreams rather than out in the conventional world. And so, yeah, so the process is to pull forth that Vajrasattva mantra, and that's, yeah, exactly what you did. So very good. So Karen has said in the chat, this is so weird. I think in response to Ava, just being a fairy for a little while there, that Karen says, I'm not a cat person, yet I've looked after my daughter's cat for 2 weeks, and the cat is a different sentient being. That's right. Yeah, at first they're just generic, aren't they? Cat. And then you get to know them, and they're their own person with their own eccentricities and things. And
She was just amazing. And she knew that I was the one straight up that was going to look after it. And, I started really researching cats.
did you manifest as Vajrasattva so the cat is putting the paw on Vajrasattva?
Well, he sat right next to the Buddha, but you're in amongst all these blessings, medicine Buddha and all the walking underneath and being blessed and looking in the Nangal mantra. I had it right by a bowl and
Whenever you can, when you're doing your Vajrasattvas, say the first one out loud so that she hears, because animals' ear sense, it's very refined, much more refined than ours. So the sound of the mantra goes in much deeper. And Geshe Zopa said also because animals don't have all the emotional baggage and resistance that we have with all of our intellect and our ideas, they're just there. They don't have beliefs. Animals don't have beliefs. So when you recite the mantras, the mantra goes in really deep. Whereas for us, it hits all these blockages along the way. So saying the mantra to the animals is really, really effective. And that's why Lama Zopa Rinpoche read sutras and said mantras out loud to the animals so many times.
The poodles do an evening practice with me, and they sit on my lap and lie around the place, and they're annoying. But the minute I start to do the dedication prayers, chanting them, they get off my lap and go out. They know exactly where you
It's
are.
done. Last week I was thinking a lot about the four opponent powers, and because with this, daily purification, you do this in conjunction with the four opponent powers. So the four opponent powers are built into this, but we don't often get to contemplate each of the four R's in terms of specifics of what we've, say, done today or this week. So we might spend a little bit of time tonight doing that so that the practice gets tied to the events of the day or the events of the week. It's really powerful to do this because they're the ones that are reverberating in our being, preoccupying our mind. It's important that we start with our own experience rather than try and disregard our experience and jump straight to all sentient beings. Because all sentient beings really just means yada yada yada, doesn't it, half the time. So it's got to be the sentient beings that I interacted with today, this week. The friends, the enemies, the strangers, the problematic ones, the ones I love, the cats, everybody, all of these beings, all sentient beings, including these beings. And so then all sentient beings becomes personal. Same when we're doing the purification to actually think back over the week and identify any unskillful actions physically. Even just, I mean, it's very unlikely that we're going out and killing anybody. That's largely due to our incredibly fortunate completing karma that we're in a country where you don't have to. But, you know, if we were born somewhere else in a different country, we wouldn't have that leisure. So it's a real leisure that we don't have to commit killing anybody. We can pretty much avoid stealing, and we can pretty much avoid sexual misconduct, though it's surprising the amount of people that don't. Just through desire, isn't it? Desire just wrecks everything. Then, if you do gardening, there's going to be creatures that are harmed. So it's not intentional, but there is harm there. So you can go down a next level of, so it's not overt, I'm going to go out and squash everything, but accidental killings or harms to let yourself feel bad about it and feel for those beings and try and be able to benefit those beings in some way. Of course, it's much easier with speech to look back over the week or the month and see how we've gone with that and how many instances of the four main unskillful ways of communicating, how many times we yelled at somebody, how many times we said sharp, harsh words, how many times we just started bagging somebody or just telling about their faults. It's such an addictive thing to do, isn't it? It's not addictive to sit there and rave about how fantastic someone is. It's just really the slander, the lying, the harsh speech, and the,
Idle gossip, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
idle gossip. So that can be gossip, but it can also just be an obsession with the news. Just like, oh, did you hear what happened? Blah, blah, blah. So there's no meaning in it. So actually, a better translation is meaningless speech because you can talk about inconsequential topics, but in a really nice way, and it establishes connection. You know, so you're on the bus with someone, you're not going to talk about religion or politics. You probably talk something innocuous, but you can make a nice connection with someone. So it's to do with the attitude. So the main thing about the idle gossip or the meaningless speech is speech that runs on and we're not aware of it. It could be venting. It could just be going blah, blah, blah because you're terrified of silence. Or it could just be talking about distractions because it's a habit.
And just divisive.
Divisive speech. Yes. So, or slander. Yeah, those two. So that one, we may not be spreading false rumors or sowing disharmony and dissent, though a lot of the shouty stuff on Facebook is that, isn't it? All
And
the.
politics in general, really.
Yeah. And there's nothing like a shouting, horrible politician to bring out all of the shouting and horribleness in our response, is there? So to not respond in kind takes a lot of kind of presence of mind. But mainly, like, we might not do overt slander or bag somebody. Obsessive criticism is like a more subtle version of that because it's kind of the criticism runs us rather than we control the criticism. So you can tell by the character of it, that the feel of the criticism, that it's not constructive criticism, it's not filled with joy and connection, it's just filled with Then the three of the mind, so they are more. They're not so much physical actions, but they're activities of the mind where we get stuck in a rut and we go over and over again. And they come to their culmination when we act on them. You can be fuming about all the good stuff that somebody has and covet it and really wish it and hate that they've got it. And then that becomes an activity of the mind of covetousness, so it affects our own mind. But it comes to its fruition if then you go out and take the thing. So I noticed today I have this battle every time someone wins the lotto. I have a battle in my mind. Am I happy for them or am I jealous? I'm so ashamed. Like, it's really hard for me to rejoice at somebody's fortune. Even understanding karma, that it's not random, it's the fruit of their extraordinary efforts from the past. And yet, it's just so hard to rejoice for their fortune. That, and then the hatred one, maliciousness. Again, if people are all nice and calm around us, it's easy. But if we're surrounded by really destructive, malignant people, it's very easy for us to respond to mirror it back. The last one of that, the 10 non-virtues, is wrong views to do with the mind. So that's that's a huge one because it can go from really, what would you say, really coarse versions of it. So fundamentalism, anything, prejudice, anything that is a concretely held view that harms others. So it doesn't even have to be religious. It can be sexism and ageism, any kind of fundamental religion. Buddhists too can be fundamentalists and say the others are wrong. In fact, it's part of the vows, isn't it, to never denigrate not even other religions, but other lineages within Buddhism. And of course, then much more subtle, the wrong views of grasping at true existence, inherent existence, the root cause of samsara. We do that all the time, every day, but solidifying it and then holding to your position, that's the one that's really destructive. So I don't know if you can think of instances of all of these that have happened since we last met, like a month ago, but as we've been talking, if things have come up that you've gone, oh yeah, I get that, or I remember that, then when we do the practice, now they're in our awareness. So we've got a specific thing to purify. And when you have a specific thing, it becomes meaningful to you. You have a connection with it. Then you use that specific thing to purify every other instance of it in this life and all previous lives. But it's really good to have an idea. Oh, that time that I retaliated with my speech, said that thing, raised my voice, didn't mean to, didn't say sorry, just unskillful speech. Okay, that and every other time that I've been unskillful in my speech in any situation in any lifetime. And then it's authentic. I reckon anyway, it's authentic if it's anchored to an actual instance of something. And so then when we get to the bit of the remedy, of course, the remedy can be anything positive that we do in our mind, because the purification, the remedy isn't fixing the instance out there. The remedy is fixing our mind. So the remedy has to be in our mind. It's not about fixing what we did. It's fixing our mind so we don't do those things again. So for that, we can do anything positive. So the Vajrasattva practice, saying the mantra, is a remedy. If on top of that we want to do something specific, like go and use our speech kindly, recite a sutra to the cat, for instance, as part of the remedy, an atonement that's really nice to do, we can add that on as well. If there's something that's really been playing on my conscience, then I like to do something that is a counterbalance to whatever it is that I've done. So if it's to do with a physical thing, you go and do something to physically help or benefit others. If it's to do with a speech, in my case, go and lead a whole stack of pujas. Or that we've got a sutra recitation coming up, recite the sutra for the benefit of all sentient beings.